This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. Charlie LaDuff is, I think it's fair to say, you jump into a story with both feet. In fact, I saw a TV piece you did where you were trying to find out how long it took the Detroit cops to respond to a robbery call. And you stayed with that woman for so many hours, she finally let you take a bath in her bathtub?
Sure did. Well, you know, the reason she let me take a bath is because when I went back to McDonald's to get a sweet tea with no ice, when I came back, I spilled it on my pants, in which case I took a bubble bath and she laundered my pants. Indeed, it took about 4 hours, and I had to go out to the street to wave down a cruiser. So they're not fast in Detroit, say the least.
Right. Well, I knew there was a perfectly good reason why you took the bath, but I just was using this to illustrate where you come from. You came from blue-collar Detroit, and in 2013, you went out to interview people in the American outback to see what it was that had disillusioned them so much. Now it's 5 years later, and I thought it'd be good to ask you for an update. We are, 500 days into the administration of a president who promised to help these folks, and I'm curious if you think that what he's done has satisfied them, if they feel happy with the purchase.
First of all, it's not the outback, it's the country. Mm-hmm. It's the majority of the country. That's important. Two, I went to live with them, take a bath in their home, work with them, go in the coal mines, you know, sort of anticipating what we all should have known, which is things aren't going well. Here's why I think Trump is the president. The reason people voted for Obama was because regular people feel they got screwed by a corrupt elitist establishment. That's exactly what Obama ran on. Trump simply had to parrot the words. He's not from it. I don't know how he would know it. He might have gleaned it from a construction site or had it polled, but that's exactly how they both won. Do I think things have changed markedly? No. Why do you think 9 million Obama voters went for Trump and 4 million others didn't vote at all? They just feel that the world's moving by, it's moving rapidly, and they're not taking into consideration. And I've been in Washington State many times, and I know many people feel that way, regardless of who's president.
Right. So, all right, whether we pin it on Trump or not, then, what is it that the people that you know best need from their government? Or is there anything the government can do for them?
Look, the government makes big decisions that destroy regular people's way of life. You go off to war. You come home. You're walking around on a popsicle stick. You can't get a VA appointment. Your house is worth nothing. It's bounced back. They blew the market full of air. But your brothers are still living in an apartment. More men than ever are not working. Real wages do not go up. You wonder if it can change at all. But you're at least going to stick your eye in the establishment and hope it does get better. Can it get better? I don't think many of us think it can, but that doesn't mean that your frustration's any less or you shouldn't be frustrated, and that, you know, the rise of this guy is not because of a great white menace. It's because of a great discontent.
You come from Detroit, and there's certainly no city that more represents the decline of America than Detroit. Where does it stand now?
Well, they say it's coming back, but that's gossamer. That's taking money from the most bereft city, from the neighborhoods, from the hood, if you will, and pumping money into billionaire development downtown. Meanwhile, the schools continue to crumble. The roads crumble. Chrysler's, consolidating. GM, it is shaky. We don't know. Crime is out of control. I don't know. I don't know if it gets better. But again, my supposition was Detroit wasn't a freaky outlier. It's the epicenter of this country. If that was the mechanical heart, if that was the richest city in America just 4 decades ago, if that's what Detroit looks like, well, when I go to Chicago, pension issues, murder issues. When I go to Baltimore, murder issues, pension issues. When I go to the countryside, poverty issues, schooling issues. I don't know. It's we got a lot of problems.
Well, I mean, the way that we're going about fixing them now is to, well, we cut business taxes, so businesses are flush with money. Presumably, they'll create jobs and raise the salaries of those who have the jobs. The reason for building big buildings in Detroit, I think, is on the theory that if you make downtown bright and shiny, it will attract people to bring it back. Do you see, among the people you talk to, is there any hope that that will actually work? And if not, then what do you do instead?
Well, of course, we're hoping, but I mean, does trickle-down work? What is the multiplier effect of that investment? Basically, if you're giving a billionaire $20 million a year for his development for 30 years, show me the $20 million a year in income taxes that we would capture. At that rate, Detroit would have to create today, right now, 1,000 millionaires making a million a year. I mean, that's voodoo. What is the solution? Probably an investment in people. You can't have biggest pocket of poverty in America in Detroit, the worst schools, the highest levels of illiteracy, and think building shiny stuff is going to get it done. People need services and they need education.
Does that mean some form of, I mean, given that people have very low income and can't afford it, does that mean some measure of socialism?
No, I mean, in this great country, it's called a progressive tax. We've mm-hmm. done that forever. In fact, since the beginning of the colonies, we taxed corporations. We had to pass an amendment to the Constitution to tax people. So I don't see businesses. The country wasn't built on businesses getting handouts. The business was building a middle class, not a super rich class. So why do I pay more than the governor of my own state? And why is my mayor under federal investigation for corruption, for spreading the grease, federal taxpayers' money to large companies, connected people, contributors? Mm-hmm. Why again and again and again? We feel that in every state in the union, at all levels of government, and I think we're all frustrated with it.
Well, good question. Are voters organizing to kick the bums out?
Well, we do that every 2 years, and then it's just
new bums.
They were more bums. You know, and then you get cynical. You don't want to be cynical.
Oh, I know.
I mean, democratic capitalism is a great system, right? Certainly democracy. It beats the monarchy. It beats communism. Capitalism works if a few rules are held in order, like no cheating, no counterfeiting, no monopoly. And we kind of have cheating in a monopoly.
Yeah.
Got to keep democracy's patient. We got to keep going. We can't burn things. We can't point guns at each other.
No.
That's not the solution.
Let me ask you this. As a gun owner and as somebody who knows all these people in some of the toughest communities in America, where do you come down on the whole assault weapons thing? And do you think there is some kind of compromise that would control the bad people with guns so that the good people with guns wouldn't have to be the go-to vigilante force that apparently we're trying to set up here?
Well, it seems increasingly to me like the assault rifles are being used for – I know there's a lot of people use them for sport and hunting, right? But – increasingly, they're used for the threat of civil war and for insanity. They're everywhere. I don't know why we need them like that. Here's one possibility. How about this? We're never going to take it away from you, right? And there will be a run on AR-15s. But here's the deal. You can no longer manufacture them. Number two, if you have one, you may not change title. You can have it to your dying day. Mm-hmm. It's yours. The government will not come take your weapons. That's like it is with machine guns. You may not purchase a machine gun manufactured after 1968. That's why you don't see fully autos, right?
Yeah.
We can do this. And if we do catch you with an assault rifle not registered to you, then it's $500,000 fine. It's not a prison sentence.
Right.
That doesn't seem to work. In America,
make it painful.
Money's more serious than death in America. $500,000 fine will take your stuff. So if you want to get rid of them, but you don't want to have, you know, stormtroopers coming in your home looking for your guns, that's probably the best way. It's a long-term issue.
Have you run that by Wayne LaPierre? You think you'd get any support for that?
You kidding me? I bet you Wayne wouldn't even walk around Detroit with me, unarmed.
Yeah. Have you asked him? Have you challenged him? I've never known him to back down from a challenge like that.
Do you know Wayne personally?
No, I do not.
Well, okay. Well, you know, I'll give him a call. I mean, I'm not belligerent. Again, I'm a firearm owner. I try to be responsible. You know, they're good for sport, and they're definitely good for protection.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not worried. I'm not worried about the police. I'm worried about the guy coming in my house, and you step one foot in there, I will drop you. No doubt about that.
No, I'm convinced. And actually, I mean, I'm not a firearms owner, but I certainly agree you have a right to protect your home. What I don't get is why people are so, a lot of them are so careless about how they store them, and how a lot of families are careless about who gets access to the gun safe. That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you're not talking to a guy that doesn't know we have a profound and deep problem. But without your listeners and you trying to think I'm shifting it, consider something that's a Second Amendment right. I mean, as a derivative, we believe, you know, that's a God-given right in this way. But opioids, as last time I checked, are not enshrined in the Constitution. So why aren't those illegal outside of the hospital like they used to be? It kills four times as many people, maybe because big money's involved and a lot of bad things for the American people.
Opioids, I don't know how you do that. Well, I mean, the problem with opioids is that they're self-administered. So it's not like somebody is waiting for you in the bushes to shove opioids down your throat. There's usually something else going on in somebody's life when they decide to, when they get to the point of overdosing on opioids.
Yeah, well, you're right. Again, we get to personal responsibility, but they were illegal because we know what they do.
Yeah.
The addictive quality of heroin, it'll kill you. And people, look, it gives you a nice rush, you know? And then you're looking for the rush. So you're not a perfect being. You get it, you like it, you try it again. Eventually, you screw up. So don't you take the weapon out of the person's hand again.
Yeah.
Weapons are enshrined in the Constitution. Opioids are not. People weren't dying 60,000 a year 20 years ago because they weren't legal.
The problem, though, is all the prescription drugs that are legal. Then you have unscrupulous doctors who start handing them out like candy. That's what happened in West Virginia. I mean, the companies knew how much was being ordered by these doctors in West Virginia and say, well, it's money. We'll take it. What the hell?
That's what everybody's right. Millions of pills in a county with 6,000 people. You know, I mean, there's money's really infected, you know, the body politic. And when it rolls downhill, it rolls right over you. Again, that's what I see in America. And this is, you know, the book I wrote, just to, you know, let you know I wrote that book, isn't a heavy-handed look at this. It's sort of a rock and roll bouncing around through America, but with some deep, concise looks at things like, you know, what Americans do. Slaughterhouse work, you know. Yes, of course they would, but they used to be paid $25 an hour in today's money, which is more than an auto worker makes. Now they make half that, and it's mostly Latino. So you can see where the profit goes and who gets squeezed. So I don't think the American people are wrong in their discontent. It unfolded before their eyes, and they're sort of like living relics in the ash can of history.
Charlie's book is called Show. We'll censor that. Don't worry. The country's collapsing.
No, don't.
I have to. The country's collapsing, and the ratings are great. So is this your thing now? I mean, you work for the New York Times, won a Pulitzer Prize, work for the Detroit News, and then for Channel 2 in Detroit. Are books your thing now?
Fox National, yeah. About every 5 years, I write a book, and I blow up my life, and I kind of start over, look for something new to do to stay fresh and to remind myself that I'm alive, that, you know, my DNA is being a hunter and a wanderer. And right now, when the country asks the media, hey, man, you got it wrong. You don't understand this. Why don't you take your makeup off, take a step back and figure out what you're doing and who you're doing it for? I walked, and I'm a handyman at a diner. I'm plunging toilets and scrubbing grease traps and fixing the tile and doing the books. At the same time, it's a gentlemanly step back because I have written this book. But I just want to be part of society, not above it, and not a pointy head making pronouncements and judgments that I have no factual basis to do.
Well, I admire that, this in the trenches stuff. And I was listening to you talk about your the reason for leaving the New York Times and the Detroit News. I got the feeling that editors just couldn't abide somebody who puts that much life in their stories. Did you work with an editor on this book? How did they deal with it?
I wrote it myself. My friend, I gave it to him to edit. Then I gave it to my publisher, and she loved it. And she's a hard publisher. You know, she's a leading person in American letters, and she dug it because this is the thing from the streets and not this TV studio, you know, maybe that needs to be said or a look at it. So this is where I come from. You know, to me, it's not the trenches. It's my mom's kitchen. And I think we count too, you know, and here's my attempt to do it.
Yeah. So you're on the tour for this book show. What do you do next? What's your next big idea?
I'm not sure. Either go back to, you know, media in some way, or I don't know. You know what? Maybe I get into PR or marketing. No, I'm just
I don't know.
Like that everybody sounds like, else that left journalism.
I think that would force you to dress up more than you want to.
How many reporters do you know have like left journalism and they're doing PR? And I'm like, there must be 10 PR people that every reporter left now. There are nobody to PR to.
Well, big problem is there's 10 opinion writers to every reporter now. I think there's like a few dozen guys actually going out and reporting the news, and the rest of us just talk about it.
Oh, and let's be honest. Like, you know, well, you got to work, but, you know, you get up in the morning, you sit on the can, you go through your phone or your iPad. What's the news? What's the news? It's usually from 3-5 sources, right? New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, AP, and Reuters. And then there's 80,000 stories from all these websites and stuff. Like, you had nothing to do with it. You just give me your opinion on what they reported. And it's like, how about somebody? How about this one? I'll give you one. Can somebody come back to Flint, please? This mm-hmm. was the biggest story in the world for 2 weeks, and it's still screwed up, and nobody's been back.
Is the water still yellow?
Still closing. No, they say the water's okay, but you know, who believes the water's okay? And that's the sort of the context of why you want to get there. It's like the ghost in the machine, the alligator in the pipes. Is it? Isn't it? Should you trust your government? What about what's left? The murder, the lack of work, the poverty. These are the sort of things we might want to busy ourselves with and do them in an interesting way. Instead of correspondents writing them like a term paper, or they show up in Buster Brown outfits they just got from the Banana Republic. They're nicely starched and a nice brown makeup, and their hair's done well. They come in for 1.5 minutes and they're gone. Yeah. That doesn't work. Oh, and by the way, this book, you can go online and look at the stories we did. The book is in no way a repetition of these stories, but you can see how we do television journalism. You know, I'm going to put on a Speedo with USA tattooed on the ass, and I'm going to kayak in a rubber yellow kayak in the middle of the smuggling route in the Rio Grande, where they're bringing women and children over on jet skis to sort of elicit a response from these smugglers, give you an idea of where it's at and how ridiculous it is. And in the end, me and my two guys, Matt Phillips and Bob Shuttlebauer, the camera guys, we found two guys entering illegally, hiding in the reeds of the Rio. Hmm. What's more ridiculous than three reporters from Detroit doing the Border Patrol's job?
Nothing that I can think of. Well, keep it up. I thought it was a pretty refreshing reading. I wish there was somebody with some ideas on how to bring back a city like Detroit, because I got to say, I mean, the idea of having what, and I've been a long time, I mean, I haven't been there since college. I had a roommate was from Ann Arbor. Another thing I remember is we got into a rear-end accident after crossing the Windsor Bridge. But it was, at least back then, it was a hopeful city, you know. It was a Motown. And to see it turn to a third-world country, you would think that with all the billionaires exploring space and curing malaria, somebody would come up with a way to fix Detroit.
Yeah, well, you know, we believe we're on our way, and it's the downtown and midtown silk stocking district looks great. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about the financing, but then you go out into the neighborhoods, and it's a shooting gallery.
Wow.
And the kids are being cheated. And I think one way back is a slow, methodical way back. You know what I mean? There's no quick fix, lightning strikes. You build an office tower and a casino, and all of a sudden everybody's rich. I studied economics at Michigan, and that was never in any of the classes. I didn't read, de Tocqueville never wrote that, and Milton Friedman never wrote that, and Keynes never wrote that. It's hard work, grindstone, adding the numbers, and stop stealing. The government has to stop stealing.
Well, that's a good starting point.
Yeah, isn't it, though?
Yeah.
I like you, man. This is cool. We should get a beer later.
We could, but you'd probably jig me under the table, so I don't know if I'll do that.
Well, look, I can look out for you, but you have to pay. You know, I'm kind of...
Okay, you got a deal.
Yeah. I got a baby to put through college.
Yeah,
you know how scary
right.
that is these days?
No, I know that. Show is Charlie Duff's latest book, The Country's Collapsing and the Ratings Are Great, which they are. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it, Charlie.
Really my pleasure. Thanks a lot.